Welcome everyone to the PlayStation 5 Central Podcast, where we give you all the news, reviews, and the
rumors
of all PlayStation games. I think the intro I slightly differed from Dan, but I am your host today, Vicar, and I'm joined today by Jordan, as Dan would normally like to introduce you. George, how you doing?
I'm fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I thought I'd get away from my name being butchered, my relatively simple name being butchered with Dan not being here, but that's fine, mate. We're resilient here. Thick skin.
You can imagine a name like Vicarth and how butchered that gets every day. So I feel your pain, Jules. Definitely feel your pain.
Speaking of first world problem from JT here.
Speaking of non-butchered names with a simple one-syllable, three-letter word, Dan is on holiday. He's living his best life, and he deserves a break, so we wish him a great holiday, good rest, help him switch off. Probably, would you reckon he brought his Portal? Do you reckon he brought it there to play?
No, because he wasn't loving it, and because he wasn't loving the connection, I don't reckon he took it with him.
Yeah. Although Dan's pretty good at switching off. I feel like he's not the type of guy to bring gaming everywhere he goes. Like, he's pretty,
Think about how much he made fun of you for playing Assassin's Creed, or that dude playing Assassin's Creed on the beach or whatever
the
it was.
Beach, yeah. I mean, I brought Mortal Kombat to my Bucks party, so I can't laugh at that guy. we hope he's having a great little holiday. So we've got a lot to cover this week. It's a lot of news. We're going to be probably talking a little bit about the old competitor, Microsoft and Xbox, and a platform I guess we both love, we've both experienced. There's a lot of news there, and obviously as a PlayStation podcast, we should talk about these sort of things. It affects the gaming industry as a whole. It's their main competitor. You and I are both of the, a view that we want Xbox to flourish. We want them to do well. We want a bit of healthy competition, good games coming from both sides and that sort of thing. So maybe we'll just jump straight into it, George. So we obviously had the Xbox official podcast. Phil Spencer came on. Oh, this actually came from, a leak that
a big leak, right?
About potentially, was it Starfield and Indiana Jones, or was it mainly Indiana Jones coming to PlayStation?
Yeah, that's what it started off as, and it sort of snowballed from there. And you'll never know how much of the snowballing was accurate and everything, but it sort of snowballed and looked like it was going to be potentially Gears, potentially Halo. Mm-mm. Eventually, that was reined in before this Xbox podcast even went live, and it was reined in to be like, it's not all of those. It might be none. We're not sure. Let's wait until we hear this podcast with, is it Sarah Bond, Matt Booty, and Phil Spencer? And then Tina Ramini was the leader of the host of the podcast.
Yeah.
And it was just like a short 22-minute business update. And it was like straight to business. There was no fluff, no faff. Mm. It was just, here is what's happening, and here is the truth, the facts. Forget everything else.
Yeah. And we'll go into, I guess, every sort of the main takeaways from that. You know, this is a podcast. I want to summarize it for those who are listening. But maybe your high-level thoughts, George. What did you think of the podcast, the episode, Phil Spencer, overall? What are your high-level thoughts?
So before I give my thoughts, we need to make it clear to listeners, and because we're a main PlayStation audience, they might not be thinking this way, but as you said, we do want Xbox to be, like, I'm not a part of this tribal warfare that says, I want Xbox to fail, any of this sort of stuff. Absolutely not at all. Never really bought into it. Maybe in high school, when, you know, it's a bit of a laugh to talk about it with your mates in high school. But since then, never really bought into it. Never been one of those people who wants to see, you know, the failure of the company or anything like that. So having said that, a lot of the things that were said in the podcast, it does come from a place of, and Phil Spencer has said this himself, it does come from a place of, we're in last place. So a lot of the things we're saying, a lot of the perspectives we have are from a company that is in last place. And that was particularly around some of Phil Spencer's thoughts around exclusives and how long he felt like console exclusives were going to last. He said something like, but in 5 to 10 years, he didn't think that console exclusives would be a thing. I disagree. He obviously has a much better insight of the industry than we do. But yeah, I largely disagree with that. I think that's easy to say when you don't have the exclusives that sell as well as other platforms. I feel like that's quite easy to say that potentially your exclusives won't be there 5 to 10 years. But if you look at the exclusive catalog of PlayStation and Nintendo, for the most part, I can't see the heavy hitters ever really leaving day and date releases on those consoles. I can see it potentially being delayed releases, but that was just one thing that sort of stuck out to me. The other thing was I was surprised how, especially because of what we had been led to believe was going to be announced, I was surprised how restrained the announcements were, because we did get some announcements of some Xbox games that are coming. We don't actually know them. Mm. We just know that there's four. We're pretty sure we know what the four are, just judging by leaks and judging by what Phil did say, because apparently there is some announcements coming by those teams. They're preparing announcement trailers and all that sort of stuff that's coming out. But overall, it definitely felt like a response to all the leaks and the rumors that had happened, well as the negative fan response that a lot of Xbox fans were putting out there. And rightfully so. I think your need reaction is always going to be, oh, but I don't want to lose what makes my console special. We'll discuss this a little bit more when we unpack exactly what was said. Mm. But that was sort of my overall thoughts. I thought it was very straight to business. I do think a lot of their perspectives were from a company that are in last place and have been in last place for a while. And they're also in a situation where they're not really going to be able to make up the ground that they've lost. Mm. And I think they understand that, but they don't want their shareholders, their players, the general public to know that that's ground they can't make up. So that's sort of where I'm at. What did you think of it all, Vic?
Yeah, I don't know what to think about it, because I agree that it's good that goodbye Phil Spencer, I guess, to lay it all out on the table and to, I guess, have that desire to communicate to the shareholders, to the gamers, to customers, you know, what are the plans going forward? And there is this understanding that, yes, they are in last place. So, you know, they're not doing this to flourish. They're doing this almost to survive. And you could sort of see in the way Phil Spencer was talking that he was coming from more of a survival mindset than a sort of flourishing mindset. And I actually do think there was a bit of fluff in the way he was saying things. So that what they were going for was straight to the point, let's talk about it, let's lay it all on the table. But I just think there was a bit of, I guess, inconsistency in the message. And I think with Phil Spencer and Xbox, there's always been that inconsistency in terms of, you know, play everywhere and what does that mean? You know, play everywhere, anytime, with everyone on every screen. And it's like, well, what does that mean for exclusives? And you can't say play when everyone plays, everyone wins. What is it when he's saying where
that's when everyone plays, everyone wins, or something like that.
We all win.
Something to the effect of that. I definitely thought, and I don't want to cut you off for too long, a lot of those stuff he said, that speaks to me as like salesman stuff and stuff that's going to speak, it's going to resonate well with shareholders, and it's going to be good quotes to pull out that they can use. Everyone does that. I'm sure that there's things that happen. So this isn't us picking on Microsoft for this, but like PlayStation would do the same, where they say specific things that they want to get pulled out that they think will make good in like news reports and that afterwards. That definitely sounds like just salesman speak, because I have thoughts on some of the stuff he said about that as well, but keep going by.
So I just think there's a bit of inconsistency, you know, especially when, you know, you're saying play everywhere and you're giving that rationality for the games you're making platform agnostic, like the four games, but then you're still saying, oh, we want to keep Starfield and Indiana Jones exclusive. And it's like pick a lane. I don't think there's anything wrong with what they're doing, right? It's just when you say something that's inconsistent with what you're saying. If you're saying we want to play everywhere, we want everyone to play when everyone wins, and you're trying to have this maybe this communication of agnosticism, and we're not about exclusives like Sony, but then at the same time you're putting exclusives and those sort of things. It's a good move, I think. I think exclusives are a great move, and I think what they're doing, these four games, are a great move. I actually like their strategy, but don't try to sugarcoat it in this message that doesn't actually go with what you're saying. Just be honest. I feel like Phil Spencer over the past few years has always had a bit of talking out of both sides of his mouth. He's always had a history of that, or trying to have his cake and eat it too. For instance, you know, them saying that, you know, that Games Pass will always remain on Xbox. But then I think he did an interview with The Verge after this, and he was saying basically like, for now, when we dive into it, I'll find that exact quote. But it was essentially just a bit of talking out of both sides of your mouth, which I wasn't I'm a huge fan of. But aside from that, I actually do think that this sort of strategy of having these four games as a bit of a testing bed to see how they're going to do on other consoles is probably a good thing, right? And how are they working with Games Pass and how they're going to facilitate all that using these games as a way to draw people in? So I think overall it was good in that way where we got a lot of clarity with what they're trying to do, but at the same time, we're still in the same spot in a way. And so I was sort of left a bit unsatisfied and I'm just, I don't know, something about Phil Spencer, I'm not a huge fan of the way he talks, I guess. But yeah, they're my high-level thoughts. But maybe, George, if you want to get into the nitty-gritty parts, maybe we'll start off with point one, where it's the four games. So
yep.
Phil Spencer said this is one of the opening things. They made the decision that they're going to take four games to other consoles. Now they didn't announce what those games are. There are leaks that basically say what those four games are or point to what those four games are, but they're basically making this change to their fundamental exclusive strategy. And here's the other thing, right? They were like, this doesn't change our strategy on exclusives. I'm like, you're literally making four games non-exclusive. This is clearly a change in strategy. Like, it is that trying to have your cake and eat it too. And
the analogy I think of, it's like, let's just say the public are the frog in a pot of water and the pot is getting hotter and they are just there going, it's not, don't worry. Like, it's not getting hotter, but it is. Because first of all, it was going to be like Xbox exclusives or Xbox exclusives. Then we saw Cuphead come to Switch. Mm. Then we saw Will of the Wisp. Yeah, the second one.
Switch.
Come to Switch as well. Mm. Now we're seeing this and they're saying, but our strategy hasn't changed.
Yeah.
I would be more than willing. And but don't worry about Starfield and Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
I think once this test happens, it won't be day and date. It won't be the first day. But I can definitely see Starfield being a delayed release, obviously, because it's already out, and Indiana Jones being a delayed release years from now, maybe towards the end of the, you know, maybe 2-3 years from release, because why would you leave that money on the table, which we can get to later on with their strategy as well. But yeah, so the four games, Vike, that have been hinted at by Phil Spencer and rumored to be are Sea of Thieves, Grounded.
Yep.
Hi-Fi Rush.
Yep.
And Pentiment.
Pentiment, yes, exactly. So The Verge, I think, I don't know if it was The Verge, but they did report on it, but this was sort of leaked. And we should also add that he did outright say Starfield and Indiana Jones will not be one of these four games. So that corroborates with the leak of these four games, Pentiment, Hi-Fi Rush, Grounded, and Sea of Thieves. But
yep.
Definitely not going to be Starfield and Indiana Jones. And the funny thing is, George, when he said four games going multiplat, the first game I actually thought of in my mind was Grounded. I thought that is such a brilliant game.
I've never heard of Grounded. I have no idea what
the game
is.
I get confused by the studio, the Fallout New Vegas studio.
Oh, right? Obsidian.
Obsidian. So Obsidian did Grounded, yeah. And it's like this sort of survival game. You're like a miniature, you're like a mini person in this world, where ants are obviously huge and spiders are big and the grass is big and it's sort of like a survival multiplayer game. And I think it was reviewed pretty well. I know it's like got a pretty high average on Steam. I think it's a 9 out of 10 and it's a pretty fun multiplayer game. And I didn't see it have much legs on the Xbox platform. I could be wrong, but this is the sort of game, especially with what we see with Helldivers and that sort of co-op multiplayer work together type game. I really think that Grounded could be a really good game that a lot of PlayStation players will get a hold of, and there could be a really good community there. But obviously not just Grounded. There's obviously the three others as well. Sea of Thieves, hugely popular on Xbox. It's made this resurgence. It's one of arguably the best game on that console. Now coming to PlayStation, what a community that can fill, you know, that game, you know, the popularity, the amount of player base that you can have with the addition of the PlayStation, you know, customers, and Pentiment, as well as Hi-Fi Rush, and Hi-Fi Rush also a special game as well. So, yeah, what are your thoughts about that, George?
My thoughts are a good range of games to go with the two smaller games with Hi-Fi Rush and Pentiment. I think it's a good idea to put those games on there because as I've often said on this podcast, I don't understand, and I need someone to explain it to me, or maybe there's no explanation. I'm really not sure. I don't really understand how Game Pass makes money back on games, especially first-party releases that released on the first day on Game Pass. How are you making money back off that? I personally don't understand. I need some sort of explanation. And when I see this stuff happening with Xbox, with them wanting to put other games on other platforms, to me, it's a no-brainer because you've got Xbox fans, rightfully so, getting these games on Game Pass. And I think Game Pass subscriptions are up to something like 35 million now, which is a massive number.
Mm.
But think of all the people who could be buying your game elsewhere, not through Game Pass, that you could have open to, that you'll be making, I'd have to assume, more money off of, even once that other console or, you know, company takes their cut. Surely that's still more money than you'd be getting from Game Pass. Because mm-hmm. you're with Game Pass, you are capping the amount of money you can make, because most people are not going to buy a game if it's on Game Pass and they have Game Pass.
Yeah, that's true.
So with the two smaller games like Pentiment and Hi-Fi Rush, fantastic idea. For two other games in Grounded and Sea of Thieves, which are these always online, I'm pretty sure they're always online community-driven games that have quite long legs to them, great idea.
Mm.
I think it's a fantastic idea. Really good first four games to test the water. They're not four games that, personally, I think, are going to get diehard Tribal Warfare Xbox fans too riled up because they're not IP that's particularly precious to the console. Mm. So I think that's why it's a good four choices as well. If this had been Gears, I can see people like losing their minds over Gears this.
Would be a big one.
So I think it's a good first four games. I do not think it will be the last. I think this is the first foray into multi-platform releases for Xbox, and yeah, will not be the last we see of it.
I agree. And I do think it's a good strategy. All these games are meant to be inward pointing. And what I mean by that is they're meant to point towards Games Pass and Xbox and that ecosystem. And when these PlayStation gamers, they see Grounded, they see Sea of Thieves, Pentiment, Hi-Fi Rush, and then when you say, okay, this is what Xbox has, and you know, we can play it here a la carte for $60, $70, or we can get on Games Pass for free. And then when the inevitable sequels come out, these are all meant to draw these consumers on other platforms, other customer bases, onto the Games Pass subscription service. And like you said, George, it is definitely testing bed. I don't think that they're just going to be four and done. We're probably going to see, we might see, I honestly think Master Chief Collection, Halo MCC could come to PlayStation. And
I reckon it could be. I reckon it'll be a while before we see it.
Mm.
But why would you not?
Yeah.
There's people who are gonna pay for it. There's Xbox fans from the past who don't have an Xbox now who will buy it. There are PlayStation fans who have never had an Xbox who are interested in trying it that will buy it.
And that is
when it's as old as it is. Again, why would you not? Especially when as we said at the beginning, and this is not us being fanboys. This is just facts that Xbox themselves have acknowledged. When you're in last place and you're not going to be able to make up that ground, I don't know even whether it's survival, but it's just looking at let's sustain and endure, because Xbox ain't going anywhere. Like, they're not dying. They're probably never going to die because they've got Microsoft money behind them, but just endure and come up with smarter ways to make money than being a massive overlord like Nintendo and Sony are.
Yeah. And it, you know, they did say repeatedly throughout the podcast that, you know, they mentioned games like Roblox and Minecraft being one of their own, where, you know, the games are or bigger than the platform. And they've said that, you know, gone are the days where you've got the games feeding the platform. And now there's almost that inversion of control where it's now the platform feeding these big games, right? And that's what they were drawing on to say, well, we want to bring these games out to as many people as they can. And that obviously goes to their message of play everywhere, anywhere, on any screen, at any time, whatever it is. I definitely see that these sort of games can be an advertising to the Xbox ecosystem, to Games Pass, when these sequels come out, when more of the library builds that are day and date on Xbox, and you're like, I could pay $70 here, or I could get it not for free, but for the subscription fee of Game
included
Pass,
in my subscription.
Included in my subscription. And when Xbox start building that bigger library, they need awareness. You know, there are great games that are not stranded. There are great games on that on Xbox. Sea of Thieves, Hi-Fi Rush, Hellblade 2 when it comes out, right? Starfield, right? So there are some great ones. They need these sort of games to point to Xbox because everyone knows about Sony and their exclusives. Everyone knows about their AAA. I know it's over the top with their third person and the amount of there is, but their God of War, their Last of Us, that movie, high-tier Nolan-style, serious, those sort of prime AAA type releases. Everyone knows Nintendo. You go there for Mario. You go there for Metroid. You go there for those sort of IPs, right? And Xbox, it's kind of not known for anything yet. And Games Pass is becoming that thing, but it's the games. That's the product they need to sell.
Yeah.
And this is a good strategy, I think. And going on to, once again, it's probably a recurring theme. You guys are going to get annoyed at me for saying this. But once again, Phil Spencer said, Starfield, Indiana Jones are not going to be in that included. And I don't know if he definitively said it's never going to be, but it was that implication. And then
it was just that they're not,
But then, things changed because when The Verge interviewed him, and I'll quote The Verge article right now, quote, Spencer confirms that Starfield and Indiana Jones are not part of the first four games, but he doesn't rule out the possibility for these titles to arrive on PS5 in the future. Quote, I don't think we should, as an industry, ever rule out a game going to any other platform, quote, end quote, says Spencer in an interview with The Verge. So this is when he was talking about Starfield and Indiana Jones. So even now, he's still keeping that door open, right? And it's probably a good thing. Like, it is a good tactic, but it is that you want to be exclusive, but you're also trying to leave the door open. And I can see what he's trying. He's trying to weave his way in and out tactfully and smartly to get as many people as he can satisfied, the shareholders who probably want exclusives. And here's the thing, right? We can see how important exclusives are to a console ecosystem, and maybe we can just mention this story and hit two birds with one stone because we're gonna circle back to the Xbox thing. But we saw that Sony's revenue flew down, right? It flew down. Their valuation dropped by $10 billion because they
That's so much money.
Yeah, $10 billion in the last week because of their announcement. Was it that they're not going to be releasing any exclusives until 2025?
So we need to be specific. It's any first-party exclusives.
First-party.
Because they obviously have things in the can like Rise of the Ronin, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. What's that other?
Stellar Blade.
What did you say? Stellar Blade. Yeah, Stellar Blade. There are those coming.
Yeah.
But in terms of your Sucker Punch, your Insomniac, your Naughty Dog, Santa Monica, that sort of tier, those aren't coming till next year. Does that also mean that things like Concord and Marathon and Fair Games, is that next year too?
That will probably be.
I know Marathon was definitely next year.
Yeah. I know. I would assume the rest are. They're pretty early in development. We've only seen like one trailer.
Hey, you know what? Judging by the way Helldivers is going, maybe they don't need anything.
Yeah.
Mate, which we can circle back to later.
Yeah.
Just want to touch on something, Vike, as well, with what we were saying about, you know, Phil sort of speaking to many audiences. Mm. One of the other things that was announced during this was that they are releasing another console towards the end of the year. There is another piece of Xbox hardware coming.
The biggest
The next technical leap. You need to think as well, why would you say, this is why at the moment the wording is key, why would you say right now the rest of our games are going to go multi-platform at some point if later in the year you're hoping to sell new hardware to people who maybe on the fence about it? If you were on the fence about buying an Xbox and then you find out that the Xbox exclusives that they have are going to be found somewhere else, why would you buy that console when you could buy a different console, enjoy their exclusives, and then those Xbox first party games that are coming as well? Why would you do that? So that's why they're being very careful with their messaging now. we could, you know, look like absolute buffoons years from now and no other exclusives come. It's just reading the tea leaves for what they are and looking at the current climate of things and looking at all the layoffs and stuff. Companies need money. They need money as much as they can. And making your games go multi-plat when you are in the position you are, like Xbox, again, they've got Microsoft money. They will be fine, but they're always going to want more money. That's why they do what they do. So why would you not consider it?
Yeah, they have the backing of Microsoft, but they still need to make that Xbox slice a profitable business.
Right? Yeah, yeah. What's coming in needs to be worth what's getting put out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, yeah, so Sarah Bond, president of Xbox, she said essentially that, quote, there's some exciting stuff coming out in hardware that we're going to share this holiday, and we're also invested in the next generation roadmap. What we're really focused on there is delivering the largest technical leap you have ever seen in a hardware generation, which makes it better for players and better for creators and the visions they're building. So I think this is really important. I actually agree. I think this is a good move. And the reason is the problem with the Xbox ecosystem right now, or one problem, is with the Series S and the Series X, right? The Series S, the RAM limitations on that, it is making it really hard for developers to develop on that console. We saw that with Baldur's Gate 3, right? Where the split screen functionality, was it split screen or multiplayer functionality?
Yeah, I think it was split screen functionality just wasn't there.
It just couldn't do it. And Microsoft had to bring in their own staff and all this stuff to help out. And you could already start seeing these limitations happening because when you're developing a console, you have to develop it for the lowest common denominator, right? That is why maybe I was a bit bummed when I heard God of War Ragnarok was going to be coming out on PS4. Not that it really changed anything, because I bloody loved that game. But it's like, oh, they have to develop for the lowest common denominator. They can't necessarily push. They can up-res things and make loading quicker and things like that, but they can't necessarily make that generational leap as per se. So, and I think because they are so limited by the Series S, they need to make a big technical leap here to make, I guess, to push the limit with what games they could create as a internal studio, you know, with all their internal studios, but also with these external studios like Larian, you know, with Baldur's Gate and what the issues they had. So I do think it's good. I mean, here's the thing though. Technical, I know that technical leap is important and obviously, but they tried this same thing, right? Play, you know, Xbox, they always said they're the technically the best console. They were always technically had better specs than Sony, but that didn't change a thing with the last generation, did it?
Mm-hmm.
It was still
didn't
the games.
Didn't change a single thing.
It was, yeah, exactly. It was still the games. But in order to deal with the problem of the Series S, I like that because they kind of need to. It's you can see those limitations starting to show the cracks.
Do you know my one hope for the next Xbox console? Ditch the Series stuff and just have a name for it.
Hey, these are Xbox One S, One X, Series S. Oh,
yeah,
I hate
it's confusing.
It's so bad. It is such a bad, confusing name.
Yeah. Like, we get it. We understand the difference. But why would you muddle the mind of Joe Blow going off the street, or, you know, Jane Blow going off the street to buy one for her kid or whatever. And they go in, they go, oh, there's a Series S or Series X. Oh, there's just this one, the PlayStation 5, which is just, this is what everyone has. I'll just get that.
Yeah. And then
it's an unnecessary hurdle.
Yeah, it is. And exactly right, George. And like, you've got PS5 base, PS5 Pro. Well, there isn't a Pro version out, but when they do it, they tend to do base and Pro. Right, I don't know why Xbox don't do something like that, you know, plus or whatever it is, gold or, anything. But it just seems a bit, they're sort of working against themselves in that way. But that was another big thing. So, we've had the four games. We've had the announcement of a next-gen potential console. I guess another thing that we saw was that Sarah Bond also said that Diablo 4 is coming to Games Pass. So that was a big one, that we're starting to see the Activision suite of games starting to make their way.
Is this the first one?
I believe it is. Because they said Activision games will start coming to the service, and the first of those will be Diablo 4.
Yeah.
Quote, she says, it's all part of our commitment to make Xbox experience, and the games we build as widely available as possible. Mate, what we said about this whole Activision thing about Call of Duty coming to Games Pass could be a reality. And that could be huge. I think it's good. Like, this is... What is the point of acquiring all these studios if they cannot fuel your main product, what you're putting all your chips on. You are banking all your chips onto Games Pass. What is the point of spending $69 billion, was it? $68 billion?
Yeah, a lot. $70 billion, something like that.
Yeah, $70 billion on Activision Blizzard King if you can't use them for your Games Pass service, right? So this is, I guess, a big one. You've obviously got ZeniMax and Bethesda, and you just need that huge library of games for Games Pass, and it can be such a phenomenal product if they work this out well. And then they've got the other games, the ones that are advertising, you know, your Groundeds, your Pentiments, your Hi-Fi Rushes, these games as little feelers for the PlayStation customers to be like, hey, come over here. We've got everything. And you can get it for a cheap subscription service. So it's a good move, I guess. You're right, Jordan, in the way that how does it value those games? Where does the profit come in? Like, as much as I'm saying this is a positive move for the product, I still question the profitability of this product, because with subscription services, in order to be profitable, you need a high subscription base. You need an insanely high. We've seen that with Netflix, seen that with Prime, Disney Plus, and the absolute sheer amount of subscribers you need for these sort of services to become profitable. I think Netflix is only recently profitable, and they, you know, the way they amortize their expenses and things is, and you know, they amortize it over maybe 5 years or to reduce that expense in the single year so that on the balance sheet it looks profitable, these sort of things that Netflix do. It's still, I guess, I haven't really checked recently how profitable these streaming services are, but I'm pretty sure Netflix is somewhat profitable. It's only been after a long time and high investment, right? So just need subscription services all are based on the customer retention and the high amount of subscribers. And I think we heard that the final numbers of they did mention the numbers of how many subscribers are currently on Games Pass. I think it's 34 million.
It was 34 million. And the interesting thing about this is that they went from, they had about a growth of 12 million. It went from something like 24 or 25 to 34, 35, something like that. However, that growth is sort of not kind of correct. It's sort of, what's the word?
Inflated?
When you make... Inflated, yeah. It's sort of inflated by the fact that Xbox Gold memberships got transferred over to being Game Pass ones. So, and it looks like the numbers are stalling. And coming back to this, I don't understand how when games are more expensive to make than ever, to the point where games like Dragon's Dogma is needing to come out at $70, where games like Baldur's Gate, wasn't that $70 as well?
Yep.
How can you possibly, when games are becoming more expensive to make, to where companies are needing to make them more expensive to purchase, how can, is it just the Microsoft money that makes them go, we can take this hit of the money we're leaving on the table because we're getting people into the ecosystem? Is that the idea? Because I just can't imagine that that's bringing in the money that you could be bringing in if people were just buying these games. When you have games that are like years old or even a year old, subscription service them. Totally get it. Because that's where you're going to have legs, whether it's through microtransactions, whether it's through purchase of DLC, all that sort of stuff. The rest of it, though, I don't understand. I just don't get it.
Yeah. It's the economics and the profitability of Games Pass and subscription services I've always been skeptical of. I always go back to what Sean Layden was talking about, how this is a few years ago now, where he was worried. He did predict this, that game cost of games is going to fly. Now, Sean Layden was a former president of Sony PlayStation, well, CEO, I guess. He did say, you know, this is going to be a problem. You are getting games that are way, way more in development costs. They are doubling and tripling in development costs, but we're still selling them for $70. You know, $60 to $70, we've had that recent leap, but in relative to the increase in development costs, we're still selling them essentially for the same price.
Especially with inflation and everything goes like that.
Yep.
He obviously couldn't predict a pandemic we'd go through, but I reckon we would have got there in the end anyway.
Yeah. And just, you're exactly right, George, the inflationary pressures of the cost of living. And it's just, it's crazy that the one thing they, I don't know why game, I guess games out of any product, any goods, any electrical good is so inelastic in its price. Like people, it's just staying at $70. Like any other electrical good or any other good, like it just goes up. Like phones are way more expensive than they used to be, or you know, anything, right? So it's
think just of movie funny. Tickets.
Yeah.
Think about how expensive movie tickets are compared to how expensive they were 15 years ago.
Exactly right. So it is just interesting. And I guess one thing I want to, back this up, the Embracer CEO, when he was talking about, so he was talking with gamesindustry.biz, gamesindustry.biz reported on this. So the Embracer CEO, Lars Wingfors, I think,
what a last name.
So basically he said in a quote here, more or less all companies are going through a restructuring program. There is less investments made from the game industry into content. I think the underlying consumer market is solid and still growing, but the underlying changes, there's a lot of underlying changes made to the industry that obviously affects the industry. He basically continues on to say, it's more driven by the overinvestment in the previous years because everyone put all capital into gaming and perhaps a bit too much capital in a few instances. So we saw that, right, with an Embracer, I mean, hundreds of studios and ridiculous overinvestment. But we did see that, you know, in the pandemic, interest rates were so low. We saw this huge investment, like overinvestment to the games industry. And then once those interest rates started going back up, debt became more expensive, the economy started going back down due to inflationary pressures, a lot of this
people stopped buying games as much as they were because they went back to work.
Exactly.
They weren't as home as much.
Exactly right.
So there's a few things working against it. Yeah, we're sort of like, it's like the hangover of it all now. This is sort of what we're left with.
Yeah, it is. So yeah, I guess there's a lot to, I guess, think about there. Is there anything you wanted to say to that before I go to the next point, George?
No, I don't think so. We discussed beforehand whether we're going to discuss the layoffs and everything because it's just every day.
It is.
There are layoffs.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely everywhere. And it's such a shame that people are being treated just as so disposable. And the problem is because there's less investment in this stuff now, there is less places for creatives in this space to go to once they lose their jobs. There's less opportunities for them to create studios. There's opportunities there. There's just less of them.
Yeah.
You think about when like studio heads used to leave studios, they would immediately go and start up a new one, get some investment, and they're off to the races. There's just not as much there now because of this hangover we're sort of in. So it is a real shame. It really sucks to hear about all these layoffs every day.
Yeah.
Every single day they're happening.
I think in the news, Activision in France or something have gone through all these. Ubisoft in France have gone on strike. Yep. Activision in Ireland have laid off. Embracer have laid off. We saw the Riot. And there's a few smaller studios that got reported that have got layoffs. So you're right. Speaking of layoffs, Phil Spencer mentioned it, right? So basically he said, quote, what happens when an industry doesn't grow? You end up with job eliminations, which we had. We had even our own hard decisions to make about building a sustainable business for ourselves, but there is no way we are alone in that. Which, look, I get what you're saying, but it was kind of a bit nonchalant about the layoffs. Like, oh yeah, we had to lay off, but everyone did as well. Like, I don't know. It's, I guess it is good to address that. And he did say we want Microsoft, I guess, or Xbox to be a place where people can invest their careers in and that sort of thing. So he did have that desire, but
yeah,
you know.
We do forget as well just how big Xbox is, and it's very easy for us to go. So, because like I work in a workplace where, pardon me, there's, you know, 90 staff members, which is, compared to some workplaces, is a lot. But it's also quite small when you compare it to a place like Xbox where you are covering the globe, essentially. Mm-hmm. We need to remember that it's not like Phil Spencer, Jim Ryan, whoever the Nintendo CEO is. It's not like they know all these employees. For a lot of it, they are just names on a page, which sounds horrible, but that's how they're able to remove themselves from the situation and sort of speak so nonchalantly about it all. Mm. It's not right, and it sucks that it happens like that. But yeah, we do forget sometimes just how big the industry is and how big these companies are. And yeah, they can't just keep everyone because they don't want to face some public backlash. It sounds horrible to say, but it really is the truth.
Yeah, that is a reality of the economy and I guess where we're at. It is unfortunate, but it does come down to management, how well these studios and companies are being managed. It does come to the higher ups. It is sort of that sad narrative that it's the higher ups making these bad decisions that they don't cop. It sort of flows, trickles down to the bottom tier, where those are the employees who have to pay the damage that these higher ups are causing by their mismanagement. But you're right, it is a reality of corporate America, corporate world. Going on again, I guess a few little points. Xbox, or Phil Spencer, did talk about wanting Xbox to last for the next, quote, 20 years. So many people know I've been on Xbox for over 20 years, and I want to make sure Xbox is in the best position for the next 20 years. Our hardware is a critical component of that. The absolute best experience someone has on Xbox is hardware that our team builds and that people play on. So makes sense, obviously, the longevity, but the interesting thing is they've talked about how games are now, the hardware fuels the games, but they've still said our hardware is a critical component of that. And I do think it's interesting, you know, when you're putting all your money in Games Pass, I did think that maybe Xbox is, you know, Xbox doesn't become a console, it becomes the Games Pass service, and they put it on PlayStation, they put it on Nintendo, they put it on PC, they put it on TVs, whatever it is, as a streaming service, right? I honestly did, you know, that could be a tactic, that could be where they're going, but it is also that good to have the console and be like, well, the best way to play it, the best way to access that service, to get the day and date, is through our Xbox console. And that, by nature, keeps them in the ecosystem longer, because think about someone who has, let's say in the hypothetical scenario, if someone has the subscription service on PlayStation, that, you know, that there's a low barrier for them to cancel it, to subscribe, to do whatever they want. But if they have a console that they've sunk cost into, and they've got this box that's $500 or whatever it is, they can't just, yes, they can cancel their subscription, but then their box is sitting there, and, you know, there's like this urge, well, I've spent all this money, I've got to make the most out of it. So I get that. But anything you wanted to talk about or address there, Jordan?
No, I don't think we'll ever see, I think this is what you're sort of alluding to when you said that, I don't think we'll ever see Games Pass on PlayStation, at least. Mm-hmm. Maybe Nintendo. You'll never see it on PlayStation, especially when there is quite a lot of crossover between games that are on Game Pass and PlayStation Plus, mm-hmm. you know, the new tiers and everything. It's not direct, but there are a lot of crossover. So I don't think PlayStation would ever allow a competitor to bring on a subscription service like that. That would, you know, if they were going to choose between the two of them, why would they do that? I wonder whether years from now we do see Xbox have a subscription service on PlayStation, but it's purely for first party games, whether that's something we see.
Yeah, so it's like a bespoke Games Pass where you're right, they probably wouldn't have the clash. They would just have the first party. Sony get a cut, maybe a 30%, 40% cut. I think going on the App Store and stuff, it's typically a 30% cut. PlayStation, on the PlayStation Store, they get a 30% cut on all PlayStation games that are sold, I'm pretty sure. I wish Dan was here. He would correct me on that, but 30%.
He's got the numbers in his head, mate. He's got the numbers in his head.
So I'm pretty sure that is the number. Look, I see what you're saying exactly. Another thing, I guess, Xbox, they said, quote, this is, I think, Bond as well.
Sarah Bond.
She said, quote, we're at the highest level of users on console, the highest level of users on PC, the highest level of users on cloud ever. We have a double-digit growth rate on PC and cloud, places where we're enabling creators to create, to actually reach new players beyond the console ecosystem, end quote. So, I mean, it's constantly growing, so it kind of makes sense that it's at its all-time high. Like, that is should be the norm, I guess. If you're constantly growing a service, you should always be at your all-time high. But, yeah, obviously, I think that's pretty stock standard. I guess they've also mentioned that more than 10 games, first-party releases, are coming in 2024. So this is Matt Booty tease that more than 10 releases from Xbox first-party studios are happening this year. He specifically named a couple of games, Diablo 4, Vessel of Hatred. That would be the DLC or the follow-up?
Expansion, yeah.
Expansion, sorry, that's the right word. Obviously, Hellblade 2, Avowed, Ara, History Untold, Indiana Jones, and apparently we don't know what those other five games are. So He's right. Look, we've got you know, as an Xbox fan, you've got a lot to look forward to. You can still see that healthy first party ecosystem starting to bubble up. I really do think Hellblade, there's a lot riding on Hellblade, and I'm a bit worried. Hellblade, from what the reports are, the length of Hellblade is the same, even though they've worked on it for how many years? It doesn't seem like there's this
long time
natural sequel leap where you'd have a longer game, more fleshed out. Because, look, I played and finished Hellblade 1. I thought it was a phenomenal game. But it was very basic in the mechanics, and not in a bad way. It did. The combat was fun. It's that typical like Ninja Theory combat, but it was that linear story with your standard, and I'm not using basic here in any sort of negative connotation. I'm just saying a pretty good thing, because the combat was simplistic in a really good way. But you could probably see that, yeah, this is sort of just that small, really good experience. And you could see how much they could flesh this game out in a sequel. And for it to be the same length, I'm just worried that they're potentially not fleshing it out. And Hellblade, I feel like, is one of those games where you're just there for the story. So to experience a gameplay and story once is great. So people want to do that again. I don't know. You kind of need more gameplay. It's not like a Call of Duty where it's just like, give me more of the Call of Duty gameplay formula, you know? So,
It's definitely going to be an interesting one, Hellblade, because I would hate for the story to be coming out of it, even if it is better, just that the length is the issue. Like, I hope that the other things they're doing in the game are enough to make up for what some people would see as a negative. Because if it turns out that it's 5 hours of tight, you know, really well-paced gameplay and all that sort of stuff, it won't be an issue. It's as soon as it comes across as lackluster that people will go, it's lackluster and it's short, not good. If it's fantastic and it's short, that's fine. It's as soon as it starts to dip away from great that length can become an issue, because it might not hang around long enough for people to get accustomed to, how do you say her name? Is it Senua?
Yeah, Senua.
Senua, yeah, for them to get accustomed to her. So, yeah, there is some, there's not an engine light popping up on that one, but it's just a be careful because, it, especially after so long, that showing that we got from the developer direct, I would have expected a little bit more.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be 40 hours. I would have thought it'd be longer than 5, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I think you've nailed it, Jorts. I mean, look, Hellblade's probably not the only game I'm worried about. I'm really worried about what's going on with the Initiative and Perfect Dark, having to get Crystal Dynamics to come in and help them. This game's been in development for years and years, and we just don't even know what's going on there. And they quoted themselves to be the quadruple A studio making this insane game. So look, there's a few problems there, but I do see the strategy of what Microsoft, or what Xbox, I should say, are trying to do, even though Phil Spencer is trying to, in my point, annoyingly communicate this in this way that's trying to be good in every way and to the point of sort of, I guess, what's the word? Not shielding the truth, but stretching just to make it look good. But I do like this strategy of let's bring out some games as a bit of a trial, advertise to the Games Pass. If more are successful, we'll bring more out, get more profit, because obviously PlayStation players are going to be paying a la carte money rather than subscription money. So you might get some of them over to the subscription service, but then as you advertise to them more and more, you're getting the sequels, and then you're just going to make Xbox known and bring over, you're making Games Pass more and more valuable to the gamer, and you're constantly going to remind them that, hey, you can get this all included in a subscription service rather than having to pay $70 every time. So it's good. And I think the last thing we'll mention is they said that there's an Xbox showcase coming this June. So apparently Matt Booty also confirmed that there's going to be a June showcase coming up, and they're going to be talking about more to come, I guess. Maybe there's other five games. When Matt Booty mentioned 10 games, 10 first-party releases, we only really know of five. So what are those other five? I wonder if there's going to be an update on what those quote-unquote four games are, because we kind of, I guess we kind of already know already, but,
yeah,
you know, a confirmation on that. So that could be exciting. Look, this is somewhat of an exciting time for Xbox. You know, all eyes are being drawn to them. And I feel somewhat positive about all this. And I guess I'm excited, but yeah, George, to finish up, I guess, how do you feel about this?
I do agree with you. It's a very exciting time. It's an exciting time to be an Xbox fan, and it's an exciting time to just be a fan of games in general. Because yeah, the four games coming out from Xbox, allegedly, I would never have played otherwise. The fact that I now am going to get an opportunity to play them, not that I will play all four, but the fact that I get the opportunity to play them is great. Do I hope it leads to something a little bit more? Yeah, it'd be cool, because I'm not getting an Xbox anytime soon, so I'm not trying out any of those other games. And yeah, the biggest message I feel like I've got across, but I just want to reiterate, this is coming from a company that is in last and has acknowledged that it is last.
Yeah.
So I don't expect Sony to be doing anything like this. But yeah, that's sort of where it sits now.
It's funny because Phil Spencer always said, like, yeah, they really screwed up with the Xbox One and they're still trying to come back from that. And he said if there was one generation not to lose, it was the Xbox One generation.
Yeah, where people were building their digital libraries. Digital libraries. That was the first one where it was really an emphasis. And now it's a lot to get people to move, especially if you think about it. It'd be cool if the PlayStation Store had a calculator for the value of your library that you have. Because not including just the games you've bought, but games you've downloaded for free, not the catalog ones, but the ones that you get given for free that you get to keep.
That's not a bad one.
Yeah, it'd be cool to see like a calculator.
You have $4,000 worth of games. Yeah, crap, I'm not going to move. Like, it's probably a way to remind them to stay where you are.
Yeah.
But what a shocking reveal that Xbox was.
Oh, so bad.
It was so bad.
It didn't help that the dude who did it is a Don Matrick.
Yeah.
Didn't help that he was such a goofball from the beginning as well.
He was so bad.
Yeah. I do think this is where I think Phil Spencer deserves credit, because Xbox wouldn't be where they are now if it wasn't for a lot of his messaging, his transparency. I'm assuming what are his ideas or his team's ideas in order to get them where they are now. Mm. It could be a very different landscape. They could have, if it was someone else in charge, they could have just said, you know what? We're not going to go and buy Activision. We're not going to go and buy Bethesda. Like, he's gone out and done those things to help better the company he works for. So he does deserve credit in that area.
He does. And that's all I'll say. Like, yeah, I'm excited. I think it's great moves, because they have to make these sort of big moves in order to survive. We know it's coming from survivorship. Phil, stop talking out of both sides of your mouth. Just give it to us straight, buddy. And the other thing, I guess,
hits him with a buddy. Oh my goodness.
Jordan and I are very optimistic, but we both are trepidatious about the profitability of subscription services. So we love it, but we still have that cloud around it. You know, the looming cloud of subscription services, their feasibility, their profitability, the high barrier requirement for them to be profitable, long-lasting things because of the amount of investment you need to actually facilitate a good subscription service. And then the amount of people. I am very worried about that, but this looks
we
like-
should mention as well, the reason we're so worried about it is the first party day and date stuff. That's the thing I don't understand. The rest of it I get, because games, like, they don't have massive tails on them in terms of sales. So once they've hit that, like, you know, whatever that portion is, once they've released, that's when they sell the most. After that, I get why they come to a subscription service like Game Pass and that. But the fact that you're missing out on that initial launch money seems crazy to me, especially when you hear about how much some of these games make in the first place. I'm like, that's a lot of money to leave on the table.
Yeah.
That's my biggest problem with it.
Yeah, I agree. All right. I think that's the first article of news we've knocked out. We're going to probably try and speed run through the rest of these, but a lot of good stuff, a lot of good news today. Let's start with some really cool news. And that's the one I want to talk about. That's Helldivers, Helldivers 2. What a story. You know, people thought, we thought, if you remember, we looked at the Fantasy Critic episode. I was so, I wouldn't say negative, but I was just very tempered about my thoughts on Helldivers, and it is killing it. I just saw that it beat GTA 5 on the Steam concurrent players, although GTA 5 is like 15 years old or 10 years old. But yes, still, it's 300,000 concurrent or 330,000 concurrent. Very healthy number. It's very popular right now. It's been very well reviewed. People are having so much fun on this game. Yeah, it's just been doing really well, I think. So
it's also eclipsed Sony's total number of concurrent players on PC for all their other games. So it's including Horizon, Days Gone, God of War, Spider-Man Remastered, Uncharted Legacy of Thieves Collection, Spider-Man Miles, Returnal, Last of Us 1, Ratchet and Clank, pardon me, and Sackboy.
Yeah.
And smash that.
Yeah.
So what a story. I can't apologize enough to Arrowhead and the Helldivers team because, yeah, I was pretty down on this. I didn't think it was going to be rubbish, but I didn't think I never would have thought it would be the success that it is.
Yeah.
Because it's really taking over.
Yeah. And I mean, we've spoken about it as a group in our little podcast thread or chat that we can't wait to play it. Where, you know, I guess when holiday time comes and George is free as a bee, we're going to be smashing it.
Yeah. It's also not a bad idea because there have been some issues. Like they had to cap the number of players who could get in. I think it was at 450,000.
Yeah.
They had to cap it at because the server load was too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, good problem to have. And they've called in like a bunch of people to help them get the servers ready for even more people, which is fantastic. I assume they break this record again once that happens. And I'll get even more people. My question now is, Vike, when do we see the first cross IP thing in Helldivers? So I'm assuming it's going to be a Sony IP. Which one is it?
It's going to be, do you know what I reckon? Killzone. It's going to be Killzone or something like that.
You're so close to the one I thought. The one I thought was Resistance.
Yeah, Resistance. Yeah. They're good ones. And there is somewhat like, look, I know we want to be in the zeitgeist of like playing this game when everyone else is playing it, but there is something nice about like I'm playing games now that I'm happy to take my time with, and this is the beauty of having a big library. We can get to it when we want to. But if we get to Helldivers, you know, April, let's say, there's server and bugs and issues are all going to be fixed. The balancing is probably going to be a lot better. There's going to probably be some DLC. There's some map pack, like some more content. And maybe a healthier community, more missions. So I see, this is the positives of a live service where it should be a better and better proposition as time goes on.
Yeah.
As time goes on, the game should be more and more and more alluring so that you're rewarded as you are part of that journey. But you're also, if you're outside that journey, you're getting more and more tempted as better things come. But yeah, so it is exciting to see this game do so well. It's first party or second party, I should say, right? First party, right?
No,
so
I believe it's first party now. First party, I think it's especially exciting because there has been a real doom and gloom and some real bad connotations with Sony's live service push.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any excitement around any of their games of those live service games like Concord, the exception of Marathon maybe. Because Fair Games and Concord have no real hype. There wasn't much about Foam Stars, even though it had a pretty it was pretty well received on launch. I think Helldivers come along and killed that, and now everyone's talking about Helldivers. But yeah, it's so good to see this like real positive story of a game that I don't believe many people had high hopes for come along and smash these records and be really going viral at the moment. It's such a success story.
It is. So I'm pretty sure Helldivers is a second party. So Arrowhead is still independent.
Oh, okay. But
published by Sony. So yeah, very, very exciting stuff, I guess, from this. So look, live service, he's a positive example of it. Let's just stay on the theme of great sales, and let's talk about Alan Wake 2. So they sold 1.3 million units. Remedy's fastest selling game to date, selling 50% more copies in 2 months than Control did in 4 months. So Really exciting stuff for Remedy. I am a huge fan of Control. I absolutely adore that game. I love it. It's a game I recommend everyone to play. It's just so heavy on the reading. Like I've never played a game that is so heavy on reading. Like you have to read so many notes and to get the lore. Some of the lore is so damn interesting, but I got lore fatigue or reading fatigue. So I think the story I couldn't really.
I think that's called bored.
No, like I was really fascinated and
you imagine telling that to your high school teachers. Oh, I really wanted to read The Hobbit last night, but I'm sorry, I got reading fatigue.
Well, I guess for me, reading is. Look, there's a whole thing about what is the best way to, like Bioshock. I love, what are they called? Voxophone.
Voxophones? Yeah, in Infinite, they were Voxophones. Yeah. I haven't played the other two Bioshocks, but in Infinite, they were Voxophones.
They're all Voxophones. Like in the way that it's audio recording, and it allows you to play as you listen to the lore. And Metal Gear Solid 5 did this when back in the day, codec calls were you freeze and you have to watch the codec call and the game stops, but which I actually love because the codec calls are so interesting. But it's something about auditory, like it's being read to you rather than, I guess you're reading it. So I did find that hard, but
anyway, shorter attention spans now as well.
Yeah, I know. I'm a TikTok kid, aren't I? But I don't have TikTok. But what a sidebar. But yes, Alan Wake 2 sales doing really well. So it's very encouraging, very exciting for. Remedy, and they're saying they've got a lot of plans for the Alan Wake universe. It just tempts me more and more to play that game. Dan has been, championing this game, telling us it is a must play. So I want to play Alan Wake 1 remastered. I want to play the Control Alan Wake DLC, go into Alan Wake 2, but I just don't know when I'll do that. But I really want to get sunk in. I really want to sink my teeth into the Alan Wake universe.
No, I would like to get to Alan Wake and Control at some stage, but yeah, as you said, when that's going to happen, I'm not entirely sure. I would like to play Control first and then go from there. Just got to get through that backlog. It's seeming like this year is not going to be a bad year for backlogs, which I don't think is a bad thing.
Yeah,
especially for PlayStation gamers with that sort of dearth of first-party exclusives coming out. I think it's a good problem to have and a good year to catch up on some games that have fallen through the cracks.
All right, well, let's switch lanes. Let's talk about the DICE Awards.
DICE Awards.
DICE Awards happened last February 15th, I think.
So yeah, earlier this week. Before the weekend or just at the beginning of the weekend, something like that.
Yeah, so we saw, just to give a few, I guess, category winners, we saw, Game of the Year, Baldur's Gate 3, which I think is pretty standard. They won a couple of awards. They won Outstanding Achievement in Game Direction, Outstanding Achievement in Game Design as well. They won Role-Playing Game of the Year. They won Outstanding Achievement in Story. So they did a bit of a nice sweep there. Marvel Spider-Man 2 got a lot of awards, Outstanding Achievement in Animation. Outstanding Achievement in Character was actually for Spider-Man 2, but for Miles Morales in particular. Outstanding Achievement in Original Music Composition in Audio Design, Outstanding Technical Achievement, Action Game of the Year. So they took out a lot of awards as well. Alan Wake 2, shout out, got Outstanding Achievement in Art Direction.
That's cool. So, that deserves it. I can see that.
Yeah, so that were the main ones. Adventure Game of the Year went to Zelda. Family Game of the Year went to Super Mario's Wonder. Fighting Game of the Year went to Street Fighter 6. Forza won the Racing Game of the Year, so Sports Game MLB The Show. So, just a bit of a roundup for those.
It's unreal how underrepresented Zelda was at the various award shows since it's come out. It really just goes to show how good Baldur's Gate was, because the year that Breath of the Wild came out, it eclipsed everything. And now Baldur's Gate's come out and eclipsed everything.
Yeah.
So it just goes to speak to how good that game is. And from what I've heard, Tears of the Kingdom's better than Breath of the Wild. So it really is a testament to just how impressive and incredible that Baldur's Gate 3 is.
Yeah. One thing I want to mention is that I think the DICE Awards, I don't know how many viewers, but it was, I remember Dan posted a picture in the chat where we showed the viewers were in the thousands, and obviously with the Game Awards they're in the hundreds of thousands, and it's just a difference. But it does go into that narrative, what we were talking about with the Game Awards, where you kind of, it isn't the awards and the awards show that draws in the people, it's the releases.
Yep.
And I think this is a clear example of that, right? It clearly shows this. It backs up that hypothesis because we do talk about how Jeff Keighley, there's too many ads, there's too many this and that, not enough. The Game Awards is actually too short. The speeches were short and we couldn't celebrate the games. We did more game releases and announcements, but he was probably just reading the tea leaves and he probably saw this well in advance. There has to be some healthy balance, but I just wanted to mention that, just goes to show.
I'm with you, Vike. If you're someone who complained about the Game Awards and complained about how there wasn't enough awards shown and they didn't get enough time to speeches, and then you didn't watch the DICE Awards, you're not allowed to complain anymore.
Good point.
DICE Awards is exactly the show you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's like, I knew the DICE Awards were on. I didn't watch it because, if I'm being honest, I don't really care that much about awards.
Yeah.
I'll tune in and, like, I've had a look through the award, who won DICE Awards. I'm like, yeah, cool. That's fine. But the awards are not something that I typically care for.
Yeah.
So I'm there for announcements and all that sort of stuff. And in the Game Awards, I'll watch the awards because it's there and I'm there for it. It's fine. I'm there for that whole package. But I'm not tuning into awards shows just for awards. And that's totally okay. I'm not saying the DICE Awards needs to change because it has an audience. It might be a smaller audience, but it has an audience. And there were still people who took time out of their day to watch it.
Yeah.
But if you are someone who was like, the Game Awards doesn't have enough awards, doesn't have this, and then you didn't watch the DICE Awards, you officially suck. And you are part of the problem.
Yeah, I will say, I think I agree with you. I think most people probably thought we just wanted a little more time.
And I think that argument can be made.
Because
it was a big overcorrection compared to last year. That definitely can be made.
Yeah.
But if you look back on all the other ones,
It's
sort of been a nicer balance. This was definitely the overcorrection. I guarantee that's fixed this year. Not the same.
I definitely agree with you, George, where there is this hypocrisy of those outraged, how dare you, Game Awards is now just all about the reveals. It's not even about them anymore. Bring it back. And it's like, well, are you watching the DICE Awards as well?
Watching the other award shows that happen throughout the year? If you're not, go away.
Exactly right. All right. Let's talk about a couple more news items. So Astrobot turning this year, George. So Push Square, they reported that there's a rumor. This is a rumor that Astrobot will return for another PS5 rescue mission this year.
I'm excited about this. We need an Astrobot rescue mission that is not trapped on VR. I would even love it if it's just Astrobot rescue mission from VR1 and it's being ported. That would make me so happy because it is a fantastic game.
Yeah.
And look at what was the one we got? Was it Astro's Playroom?
Astro's Playroom, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. What a cool little game.
That was.
We need more Astrobot. We need it.
We definitely do. I should say, so this is Jeff Grubb, journalist. He was speaking as a part of Giant Bomb's Daily Games Message Mornings, which I think is their podcast or morning show. Basically, he said, quote, there might be a few new entries in game franchises that already exist, but they just might not be major in PlayStation's eyes when they're talking to investors. I've heard maybe Astro does happen this year, so that's pretty big for me, but I get why Sony's thinking that's not a major one for us.
Yeah, yeah, so, it's not major.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think, but it's still a first-party exclusive that should be pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's one of those, I guess, ecosystem boosters. Like, it's just there to keep the healthiness of the ecosystem going. It's not the one that's driving the ecosystem like a God of War and Last of Us, but it's the ones that are keeping it healthy. A non-VR one would be great, like you said, Jordan, make it way more accessible because the PSVR2 not everyone has, and it doesn't have a huge attachment rate, so should be exciting. And
the dream would be, sorry, Vike, just cut you off before we get to the last one. The dream would be we get the announcement of Astrobot Rescue Mission 2, and when you buy it, it comes with Astrobot Rescue Mission 1. That's a port.
Nice. Yes, that would be good.
That would be the dream.
Collections are always a good thing.
I think South Park did that before. So when South Park, The Fractured Butthole came out, I know you're supposed to say Fractured Butthole. I just said Fractured Butthole because it's funnier. When The Fractured Butthole came out, the remastered version of The Stick of Truth you got as a pre-order bonus.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. That is good. Yeah, yeah. It's nice when they do those things.
You know? Yeah. And when you know that Astrobot's not going to make the most money, when you can throw an incentive like that in there, I could be talking out my bum. That could be way hard, especially because I don't know how many ports of VR games to non-VR games there have been. I know we've seen Resident Evil go from non-VR to VR, but that's probably been built with VR in mind as well. Mm. Yeah, that would be my dream, honestly, to see that. Mm. But I'll settle for a new Astrobot Rescue Mission regardless.
Yeah. Astro's Playroom was a lot of fun. And yeah. Astrobot Rescue Mission, which you played, right?
So
yeah, a lot of fun. All right, last news. FromSoft has acquired the Elden Ring trademark from Bandai Namco. So Bandai Namco being the publisher and obviously FromSoft being the developer, now they've got full rights to the trademark. So that's really interesting. FromSoft they are so unique in the way they create games that you would argue that is there really any value to holding the Elden Ring IP as a publisher without FromSoftware doing it? You know, so it probably makes sense in this way that they parted with FromSoft. But they basically said that here's a quote from, this is from Video Games Chronicles. Through the implementation of fund procurement, FromSoft will aim to proactively invest in development of more powerful game IPs for itself to strengthen FromSoftware's development capabilities and seek to establish a framework that allows the expansion of the scope of its own publishing in the significantly growing global market. So...
The implementation of fund procurement. Does that mean just going out and getting that bread?
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
Update that comes with this story as well is that it's only for the game's name. That's all.
Okay.
So it doesn't actually seem like the game itself. It's just the name Elden Ring.
They said this could have occurred separately. The transfer of the IP, like Elden Ring, would be done by contractor, not necessarily require public registration. But yeah, maybe it's to do with, you know, Shattered the Erd Tree. Maybe there's some legalities with using the Elden Ring name with a deal. Like, who knows what it is, but it's just something to mention just with how IPs work. And it's.
I wonder if FromSoft own the name Bloodborne and Demon Souls and Dark Souls.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, we'd have to look into that, I guess, but that is a good point. All right, Jordan, maybe let's wrap this up. We'll quickly mention what we've been playing this week. I think that's always a fun way to finish off the show. What are you playing, Jords?
It's cute. I am playing. I was in a bit of a limbo space, if I'm honest, because I'm waiting for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Mm-hmm. So I went back and finished Remake. I had like 2 hours left to go. So I went and finished that. I was then going to go and do the intermission, which is that it's like a 4-hour episode with a character called Yuffie. Pardon me. And I downloaded it and I was playing it on my portal, and I probably played it for half an hour. And then I was like, I don't know if I actually care enough about Final Fantasy to play this sort of stuff when I could just, it sounds bad, I could just like look it up if it's really that important to the story. Mm. So I scrapped that and didn't do that. Then I was going to go and do Crisis Core, which is the PSP game, which is a bit of a prequel to it, and it deals with Zack, who, spoilers, is a character that appears at the end of... do you want me to spoil this? Do you care?
I'll probably forget it by the time I get around.
Okay. He's just a character that appears at the end of Final Fantasy VII, and he has something with him that is interesting, and it gets the sort of mind going, and the prequel deals with him and Cloud, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. And I was going to get that because it's a remake, it's a remaster. It was only about 10 to 15 hours, apparently. And then looking up like how expensive it was going to be and in the time, I decided, I actually don't know if I want to do that either. So I ended up scrapping that and decided I'll just watch that later. So I was a bit unsure what to play. I ended up booting up Cyberpunk, and I'm going to go do the Phantom Liberty DLC. So I'm about an hour into that.
Yeah. Phantom Liberty.
I finished the base game. Now doing Phantom Liberty stuff. So I'm excited to see where this sort of goes. And Cyberpunk, the story, original one, didn't blow me away. But from what I've heard, the Phantom Liberty story is better.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited for where this could potentially take me. And I am portaling it. So
performing well on the portal. Portaling. I guess, Cyberpunk I guess it's not the most reactive shooter, right?
No, and my build was like katana, like ninja sort of thing.
Ah, okay, yeah.
So
I tried to gear my build. I only finished Cyberpunk recently, and I thought one of the best games I've played. I geared myself more towards just your standard assault rifle, but quick hacks. Mm-hmm. So just maximizing that RAM capacity. I loved using quick hacks. It was just such a unique, you know, way to play the game. But awesome, George. That's great.
We'll have this discussion another day.
Yeah.
We won't do it now. But is it just sort of like, was Cyberpunk just like Watch Dogs but a bit better? I'll leave you with that.
That's really interesting.
I'll leave you with that. So what are you going to play?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say Final Fantasy VII. You remember the god-awful PlayStation 1 mini thing?
I
still have that somewhere in my closet somewhere.
I never got it. I never got it in the end. I got the NES mini and played it for maybe 12 minutes.
Yeah.
And then never touched it. And I was like, okay, because I don't play older games. So I'm like, no, I'm not doing this.
So that, I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, does the PlayStation Mini have Final Fantasy VII?
Yeah, I think it might.
But it's
yeah.
like the PAL version or whatever. But I'm like, you know what? I have it. I'm just going to play it. So I'm planning to play that because people say you should play, you know, the original before you play the remake. And I don't know. I just thought I'll probably do that eventually. Yeah. But what I'm playing currently, so I finished Medieval Remake.
That's what I wanted to download. I need to go download that. Yeah.
I thought, really fun. Really fun game. There's still more I can do in terms of collectibles going back to the old worlds, but I'm pretty happy with it. It was a great, great little game. One of the seminal PlayStation games, so I'm really glad to have played it. And I thought it was a lot of fun. Game design was really unique and something to be commended. I've actually been playing exclusively on my Portal for a lot. I haven't touched my base PlayStation in like weeks.
How's it performing? Is it going good?
It's doing really well.
Yeah,
so
it really
I'm probably
is.
Playing games that are, like, I'm not playing Call of Duty hyper-reactive shooters.
This is exactly what we spoke about with Dan. I think this was on our Lost episode we talked about it, and I talked about it more with Dan. Yeah, that you need to really pick your games on what you're going to play.
Yeah, you
because
do.
It's not going to be a thing for everything. And that might sound like a turn off to some people, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But if you know what it can do really well, do that with it.
Yeah. I wouldn't think a game like Elden Ring or God of War would be good because it's hyper-reactive.
God of War, you could try. Especially if you're not playing on harder difficulty, you could try it. But, yeah, Elden Ring, gosh, no.
Yeah. Or if you're exploring an Elden Ring and, you know, you can. But, no, so the game I'm currently playing is Outer Wilds.
Oh, Outer Wilds. I thought you were going to say Outer Worlds because that just dropped on PlayStation Plus, which I reckon is a game I'm going to try and do this year.
I was about probably 20 hours. I was probably 15 or 10 hours into Outer Worlds. And I just fell off it. Like, it's really good. It's Obsidian. I'm pretty sure. Is it Outer Worlds Obsidian?
Yeah, it's Obsidian. Yeah.
Yeah, because it gives me the New Vegas hole in my heart. I love Fallout New Vegas. So, but I'm playing Outer Wilds. So Outer Wilds is a have you played that one before?
I haven't played it. I've heard a little bit about it, but I don't really understand it. So give me like the elevator pitch.
So it's basically a game where you're traveling to different planets. So you have a ship and you can go to different planets. It's like No Man's Sky in a way where you can leave a planet, go into the atmosphere, land on another planet all in one. There's no loading, nothing. Right. And that planet has its own, it has all the world, like it has you know, everything there. So it's not loading things. There's no loading screens. But there's also, is it a 13 minute? It's also a time loop. So the world resets every 13 minutes.
Every period of time.
Every period of time. So you sort of go to these worlds, find a piece of the puzzle, and it updates your log. And then as the world resets, you're sort of like, okay, I now know more, and you're getting more and more and more with each loop. It's a really special game. It's such an intriguing story. So the story so far is like, well, you know, how did this world come to be? There's this old ancient alien race. Like, you're not a human, you're like a different species, but there's this other alien race that have, you know, they're sort of like the Protheans in a way. I don't know, in Mass Effect, but it's sort of this mystery behind who they are, and each planet, you're just uncovering these mysteries and adding to your ship's log, and then there's different planets and you're sort of, okay, I've got this, now I'm going to, this is telling me to investigate another planet, and there's also these different plot threads, and you, it's really fun. I think it is, when it's all said and done, when I finish the game, I think this is going to be an 8 or 9 or 10. It's going to be, I feel like, something really special. I haven't finished it, so I don't know, but I'm really, really enjoying this game, and I think it's something special. So I haven't finished it, nowhere near finishing it, I don't think, but I've been playing that on my Portal. It's a lot of fun. So it's, yeah, I'm really excited to continue to play this game. So that's what I've been playing on the old Portal. So, nice, yeah, I guess that's it for this episode.
That's it.
A bit of a marathon, I reckon, we've had. So.
That is a marathon.
It's good. It was good to just be you and me, you know.
Yeah, we haven't done one, just you and I, for a long time. Nah. It's been a long time since we were on episodes consistently together in ages, and then for us to do one together, even longer.
Oh, it's good, mate. It's bloody good.
Do you know what I was doing at school today? I was showing my students this one. I was standing in like the gallery where our classrooms are, and I was like, look how good this echo is.
It's a trade. The trademark sound between myself and Jordan is that noise. But we'll do it in the quietest of places, at any random place. I'll just do it, Jordan, from across the room. You'll know it's me. But it's always good. So all right. I guess we'll end it there, everyone. Hope you have a great week. Enjoy gaming.
Doing well.
Doing well. And we will see.
Yeah. PlayStation.